Hello, everyone. Welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger for Thursday, May 13th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening as always. We've enjoyed a beautiful day in Fort Dodge. Temperature closing in on 65 to 70 degrees, but we're looking for some rain over the next few days off and on, possibility anyway. And as usual, we'll take a closer look at our forecast as we close our time together. In the meantime, Chaps Caps is the title of the first article in today's Messenger. Tops for Cops was perhaps the most popular fundraiser the late Reverend Al Henderson created through his involvement with the nonprofit organization called Serving Our Servants. The Tops for Cops fundraiser in 2017 provided the Fort Dodge Police Department officers with caps and cap badges to wear with their Class A dress uniforms. SOS is a Christian-centered group of residents dedicated to showing public servants appreciation. To continue Henderson's legacy, SOS is starting a new fundraiser called Chaps Caps. Henderson, who was killed in October 2019, served as chaplain for the Fort Dodge PD, Fort Dodge Fire, Webster County Sheriff, and Post 7 of the Iowa State Patrol. His nickname was Chappie. The goal of Chaps Caps is to provide the Webster County Sheriff's Department with dress hats for their Class A dress uniforms. We thought, let's take the Tops for Cops and expand it to all departments, said TJ Pingle, a member of SOS, who said he spoke with Sheriff Luke Fleener about new ideas for the group. Sheriff Fleener really liked the Tops for Cops, and he and Derek Christie, the chief deputy, thought something like that would boost the spirits for everybody, Pingle said. Henderson's killer, Joshua Pendleton of Fort Dodge, was recently found guilty on all counts, first-degree murder and first-degree robbery, Class A and Class B felonies, respectively. In a jury trial in Davenport, he will be sentenced June 18th. Multiple first responders, citizens, and members of Henderson's family had to testify during the trial. The trial was coming to a close, and we thought it would be nice to do something for all first responders because we have had this weight on our shoulders for a year and a half, Pingle said. All the men and women have had to relive it, testifying about it. The Chaps Caps fundraiser has two parts. Part one is SOS raising money to purchase Class A dress hats for the Webster County Sheriff's Department. Part two involves an opportunity for members of the public to purchase SOS baseball caps. The caps are Port Authority snapback trucker caps featuring the SOS logo on the front. The cap sells for $25. For each cap ordered by the public, a first responder will get one for free. You're getting something and also being able to give something at the same time, Pingle said. The baseball caps are being made by Optic Inc. The caps will be sold using a link, chapscaps2021.itemorder.com. That's chapscaps2021.itemorder.com. With every hat, we will have a thank you note to first responders, Pingle said. He said the goal is to sell 200 baseball caps. The dress hats will be given to first responders later this summer. For more information, contact TJ Pingle at 515-408-2231. Webster County deputy sheriffs will receive a 2.5% annual raise, while starting pay for corrections officers will rise by $1.56 per hour under recently approved contracts. County road workers will also receive 2.5% raises. The Webster County Board of Supervisors on Tuesday approved contracts with unions representing all three groups of employees. The contracts were approved on 3 unanimous votes with no discussion. For deputy sheriffs, a new 2-year contract with Teamsters Local 238, which represents 15 deputies, goes into effect July 1st and ends June 30th, 2023. The deputies will get a 2.5% raise in each year of the contract. Under the contract, deputies will begin working longer shifts on July 1st. They will switch to 12-hour shifts on that day. A 1-year contract with corrections officers, represented by Teamsters Local 238, goes into effect July 1st and ends June 30th, 2022. The contract provides a 9.3% increase in the starting wage for corrections officers. That wage will go from $16.73 an hour to $18.29 an hour. There are 25 corrections officers covered by the contract. Public professional and maintenance employees Local 2003 represents 35 workers, including equipment operators, mechanics, sign technicians, parts managers, and welders and fabricators. The new two-year contract with that group goes into effect July 1st and ends June 30th, 2023. There will be a 2.5% wage increase in each year of the contract. The city of Fort Dodge is offering junk days upon request, or on demand rather. There's a picture of Millie Godwin, a utility billing city employee, and she smiles after opening up a pack of stickers for the junk days on demand. Items that require a sticker includes passenger car tires, TVs, and electronics and appliances. And there is a fee for the stickers. The city of Fort Dodge has developed a new program it hopes will make it easier for citizens to get rid of their junk. The program, called Junk Days on Demand, allows residents to set up their own junk day through the city's TextMyGov feature. You set up your junk day on your schedule, said Amanda Holmes, HR and communications specialist for the city. Holmes said residents are asked to schedule a bulk pickup request on their garbage pickup day. It's simple, she said. Just text the word junk to 515-408-9888 and follow the prompts. Once you get your confirmation your request has been submitted, have your items out no later than 5 a.m. on garbage day. The city will be offering junk days on demand through at least mid-August, according to Brett Daniel, Public Works Director. We were trying to provide a better service, Daniel said, something that offered the opportunity to get rid of junk or items laying around the house. The one time a year didn't always work out for everyone. We are trying to give people the chance to get rid of stuff more often. Junk Days on Demand is for items that do not fit in the garbage carts. Collection happens on the same day that you pick up your garbage. If we're super busy with pickups, it may get moved back a day, but we'll let you know. I just don't want people to be alarmed if we don't get it right away. The service is for people who pay for garbage collection service. This technically is a resource for people who do pay garbage, Daniel said. So we will not be going to apartment complexes. This was the same for spring cleanup. Holmes also said people should consider selling the item before junking it. If you have something you think other people would want, we encourage you to get rid of it through marketplace sites or elsewhere, she said. The following are examples of items accepted through Junk Days on Demand at no cost. Furniture such as couches, sectional chair recliners, and tables. Mattresses limited to 2 per pickup. Carpet no longer than 4 feet, rolled and secured. Dismantled swing sets. Minimal building material, construction material. Must be bundled and weigh under 50 pounds per bundle. Bicycles, scooters, large toys. Daniel said any items placed at the curb must be able to be lifted safely by a 2-person crew. It needs to be able to be moved by 2 people. We have had people put out basketball hoops. If it's broken down, we can take it. The following are items that will be accepted for a fee requiring a sticker from the utility billing at the municipal building. Passenger car tires are $5 each, TVs and electronics $15. Appliances like refrigerator with doors removed, washer, dryer, microwave, stove, and dishwasher are $15. Daniel said the program is not for recyclables. What we are taking is going to the landfill, so we don't want recyclable stuff out, said Daniel. There are 3 recycling locations in Fort Dodge: the Family Video parking lot on 2nd Avenue North, Public Works at 8th Avenue South behind Kohl's, and behind Sports Page on North 15th Street. Daniel said Junk Days on Demand should help citizens clean up their properties. More options, more opportunities, he said. The total goal is to help people clean up, and I think this gives them a better chance to do it. I think it will work. I think it will be beneficial, and we really encourage using this as opposed to waiting until fall cleanup. Junk Days On Demand will be available through mid-August. There is a picture today, headlined with the words Moving On. It's a picture of Scott Danielson, or his home, rather. He sold his farmhouse north of Dayton. The home was lifted from its foundation on Tuesday and was moved across the field and was to be delivered to its new resting place on Wednesday. And that is a photo of a very large home in the process of being moved to a new location. Also, another photo in the Messenger today, picture of Christy Ward, who is RN Manager Acute Care, and Briley Linder, who is an RN Supervisor of Women's and Children's Services. They posed with flowers at the Harlan and Hazel Rogers Sports Complex this past Saturday. A team of Unity Point Health team members handed out 700 flowers with Mother's Day cards to children, both young and old, to give to their moms or a special mother in their life to thank them for all they do and let them know how special they are. And that, again, is another photo that appeared in today's Messenger. We'll click where it says More Local News, and we'll see what waits for us there. It's been announced that Godfather's is closing its doors as of Thursday. There's a picture of the Godfather's Pizza restaurant in Fort Dodge. And it's been announced Godfather's Pizza at 2305 First Avenue South will be closing its doors for good today. Manager Betsy Swanberg confirmed the closure to the Messenger, adding that the restaurant was originally going to close on Sunday, but because of staff shortages and running out of product, the pizza place will close Thursday. Godfather's Pizza first opened in Fort Dodge in 1977. And unfortunately, that's kind of a sign of the times. Reaching Out is the title of the next article. There's a picture of a bunch of folks, leaders for BASE, or Base Senior Fitness Class, go through training that took place way back in September 2016. Retirement doesn't have to mean spending all your time playing golf or sitting at the bridge table. It can also mean getting more involved in your community. Central Iowa RSVP, Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, is always looking to help connect new volunteers with volunteer opportunities across the region. We work with people who are retired or over the age of 55 who would like to volunteer in the community, said Becky Coppin, Volunteer Coordinator for RSVP, in Hamilton and Webster counties. We find volunteer opportunities for them in nonprofit organizations, including hospitals, nursing homes, schools, libraries, government agencies, or food pantries. RSVP connects volunteers with agencies that fall within the volunteers' interests and keeps track of their volunteer hours. When the COVID-19 pandemic first hit in 2020, volunteer opportunities dropped to being nearly non-existent. It did take a lot of the volunteer service that our volunteers were doing, said Coppin. They couldn't be in the hospitals, the nursing homes, the schools, libraries, or as a volunteer. But RSVP did have one volunteer program that continued strong through the pandemic. It's Pen Pal program with local schools. Seniors write back and forth to a student, and it encourages that student to learn how to write a letter and how to get to know someone who you don't know and to communicate with someone of a different generation, Coppin said. It's been a very, very successful program, and it's something they could continue to do. And now that these things are starting to get back to normal, volunteer opportunities are starting to bounce back as well. It's been a little bit of a slow process, but it's coming back online and we're ready, Coppin said. Central Iowa RSVP has a wide variety of volunteering opportunities available, and coordinators can help match volunteers with opportunities that match up with their personal interests and fits their schedule. We have a whole range of time commitment, Coppin said. The Pen Pals program, that's one letter a month. One of RSVP's biggest programs is its BASE Senior Fitness. BASE stands for Balance, Agility, Strength, and Endurance. Coppin originated the class almost 7 years ago. The classes are free and meet twice a week for about 50 minutes, taught by volunteers trained by RSVP staff. There were 16 different classes meeting at various times, in places across Hamilton and Webster counties before the pandemic hit. Koppen said this is another program making a comeback at the end of the pandemic. It's been a very, very successful program, and we've had over 500 people participate in it since it started, she said. Koppen encourages any retiree or senior interested in volunteering to reach out to her at 515-832-2525. She serves both Hamilton and Webster counties. Volunteering is very good for you, she said. It improves your mental health, your physical health. People who volunteer live longer than those who don't. Pressure canner gauges can be brought to the extension office to be tested. That's the title of the next article in today's Messenger. Are you growing a garden and want to preserve the bounty of your harvest? Do you have a dial pressure canner and need it tested? Pressure canners with dial gauges can be checked for accuracy and safety at the Webster County Extension Office, located at 217 South 25th Street, Suite C12, anytime between 8 a.m. and noon. Pressure canners with dial gauges should be tested annually for accuracy. Weighted or rocker-type pressure regulators cannot be adjusted and will usually remain accurate. However, pressure canners with a dial-type pressure gauge should be tested each year for accuracy. We cannot test Burpee or All-American brand gauges. There will be a $5 fee for testing of canner lids. Only the lid of the canner is needed for testing. The testing takes just a few minutes. Please contact Webster County Extension Office at 576-2119 if you have any questions. To help Iowans safely preserve foods, Iowa State University Extension and Outreach is hosting a virtual Food Preservation 101 course. The Food Preservation 101 is a general overview that highlights the key information Iowans need to know to get started preserving food at home. During this free one-hour online course, nutrition and wellness specialists will discuss various food preservation techniques, pressure canning, hot water, bath canning, dehydration, and freezing, provide science-based reliable food preservation resources, and answer general food preservation questions. Food Preservation 101 will be hosted online at 10 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. on May 18th and several times during the summer. These are free to Iowans across the state. To register for Food Preservation 101, check on future dates, go to extension.iastate.edu and do your search for pressure canning. Other sessions about jam making basics, salsa making basics, tomatoes, and apples will also be held. Clicking back on the messenger, let's see if we can find what happened on this date in history from our files. There's a picture that takes us back to May of 2006. It's a picture of Brad Hart, the event organizer for the Lake Nokomis Rendezvous, as he hurls a tomahawk at a target. Approximately 400 children turned out to learn about arts and crafts in the 18th and 19th centuries at Joe Shelton Park in Humboldt. And that's what happened on this date 15 years ago, 2006. We're going to look next at the news of record. Fort Dodge police logs from Tuesday report 3 domestic calls, an unknown problem in the 400 block of North 27th Street, a shoplifter, 2200 block 2nd Avenue North, car accidents, 800 block North 25th Street, South 25th Street, and 5th Avenue South. Also, a 3000 block of 1st Avenue South. Unknown problems in the 10 block of South 25th Street, 800 block of Kenyon Road, 10 block of North 17th Street. Road problems reported in the 800 block of North 15th Street, a burglary in progress, 800 block 6th Avenue North, car accident at South 17th Street, 3rd Avenue South, an unknown problem in the 1900 block of 3rd Avenue South, and harassment in the 1200 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest. That would be the Fort Dodge police logs for Tuesday. We'll head over to the opinion page. Stay home to support future nights at auditorium. Tonight's virtual event will raise money for the Phillips site, is the Messenger editorial title for today. Enjoying a night of good entertainment at home will help generate the money to create a special place for future nights out. That is the goal of the Fort Dodge Fine Arts Association and the Fort Dodge Study Club as the two groups make their final preparations for tonight's virtual fundraising event called Home is Where the Art Is. It will feature 2 hours of music and other entertainment to raise money for the renovation of the large auditorium in the former Phillips Middle School. The event begins at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, 7 o'clock on Thursday. All the action will be live streamed on the Fort Dodge Study Club's Facebook page. Phillips Middle School on Fifth Avenue North was closed when the current middle school was opened in 2014. The building was renovated to become Phillips Luxury Apartments, but the large auditorium was left intact for community use. After being in use continuously since the school opened in 1922, the auditorium now needs some updates. The Fort Dodge Fine Arts Association and building owner Phelps Brothers LLC joined forces to accomplish that. So far, the stage has been repaired, new carpet has been put down, and renovations have started in the bathrooms. The list of things yet to be done includes updating the light and sound systems, hanging new curtains. Obviously, that costs money, and that is where Home is Where the Art Is comes in. Musicians are set to perform include the duo Cosmic Brownies, which is Chris Carr and Jeff Blummo, the Seacore Strings, Clint Rydell, and Alex Trevino. Painters will be in the auditorium creating artworks throughout the evening. There will also be silent and live auctions. The evening promises to be a lot of fun for a worthwhile cause. We encourage everyone to grab some snacks, settle into their favorite chair or couch, and enjoy Home is Where the Art Is tonight. And that is the Messenger editorial. Again, I'm looking back in the article. The action will be live streamed on the Fort Dodge Study Club's Facebook page. And again, that is the Messenger editorial for today. There's a letter to the editor entitled Fort Dodge Area Symphony is Back. And this is submitted by the Fort Dodge Area Symphony and Hope Brown. To the editor, the Fort Dodge Area Symphony is excited to announce our plans to resume in-person concerts for the 2021-2022 season. Please mark these dates on your calendar, October 17th, December 5th, February 27th, 2022, along with April 10th. All concerts will begin at 3 p.m. and will be held in the Fort Dodge Middle School Auditorium. As our planning continues, we will update the Fort Dodge Area Symphony Facebook page to keep you posted on the most update information. We are so excited to see you again. And again, that is submitted by Hope Brown and the Fort Dodge Area Symphony Board. We'll go ahead and take a look at some articles in the Daily Freeman Journal. Breaking New Ground is the title of this first article. Construction set to begin on Iowa Specialty Hospital's Webster City Clinic. There's a picture in the paper. It looks like, 3, 6, 9, 12 individuals who are turning over some fresh dirt at this construction site. Ground was broken at the site of the new Iowa Specialty Hospital Webster City Clinic Wednesday afternoon, marking the start of the building construction project on South Superior Street. Members of the Iowa Specialty Hospital and Clinic's Administration Board of Trustees and several providers were on hand to turn the first few shovelfuls of soil at the construction site. Joel Peterson of Peterson Construction walked the group out onto the site where workers have been preparing the ground for the project. The groundbreaking took place near where the front door of the clinic will be located. The new clinic building will be 13,400 square feet structure with about 20 exam rooms and large parking lot for patients. Currently, the Iowa Specialty Hospital Webster City Clinic is located at 903 Wilson Avenue. In November 2019, ISH purchased Advanced Family Medicine, the private medical practice operated by Dr. Donald Woodhouse. We're so excited about this project, said Steve Simonon, CEO of Iowa Specialty Hospitals and Clinics. We're bursting at the seams now at our current clinic. We're so busy. We can't wait to open up, he said. It's very, very needed. The existing clinic features 6 exam rooms, which are shared by 3 family providers, Dr. John Swisher, Kristen Davison, PAC, Carrie Patton, PAC, Tricia Bartlett, PAC. MPAS also provides dermatology services at the clinic. Swisher said he and the other providers are looking forward to the time when they can move into the new building. We feel so lucky. We're looking forward to getting into a bigger space and having more opportunities for our patients and providing the excellent care that Iowa Specialty is known for, he said. In announcing the project in December 2020, Semenin told the Daily Freeman Journal that several spots had been scouted in the community as possible locations for the new facility, but the Superior Street location offered easy access on a main thoroughfare and backed up on the Boone River Recreational Trail. This is just a gorgeous area overlooking the river, and also Superior Street is so well traveled and is right off of Highway 20. After we found that property, we stopped looking. We're super excited to be expanding in the Webster City community. We've had a presence here in the community for a couple of years, and now we look forward to adding some additional services and specialties, said Amy McDaniel, Chief Executive Officer of Iowa Specialty Hospital, Belmont Campus. McDaniel oversees the clinic operations. Semenin said he expected the construction project would be finished in the spring of 2022. The definition of selfless nurse is the title of the next article. VDMCRN Deb Thielen presented the DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses. An emergency room and infusion center nurse at Van Deese Medical Center, described as the definition of a selfless nurse, was named the recipient of this year's DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses. Deb Thielen, RN, was selected for the honor and was presented with a certificate, bouquet of daisies, and a small figurine to commemorate the award. The award ceremony was held in the courtyard of Van Deese Medical Center Wednesday afternoon. Lisa Rich, Chief Executive Officer of Van Deese Medical Center, welcomed those in attendance and offered congratulations to all the nominees. It feels great to be here, gathered outside on this beautiful day to honor and celebrate such wonderful individuals, she said. I'd like to extend a heartfelt congratulations to all of our nominees for your dedication to serving others and giving back in such selfless ways. 8 nurses were nominated for the DAISY Awards for Extraordinary Nurses, including Thielen, who has worked for the hospital for a total of 33 years. Jacob Studer, RN, who has worked 1 year in the surgery department. Ashley Buback, LPN, who has worked at the family health clinic for 2 years. Tracy Henderson, RN, who has worked 5 years in the surgical department. Allison Kane, RN, 13 years of service in surgery. Robin Meyer, RN, surgery manager with 9 years of service. Cindy Christensen, RN, 7 years in the med surgical department. And Jackie Lux, RN, 9 years service in the surgery department. Amy McDonough, Chief Nursing Officer, explained that the DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses was created by the family of J. Patrick Barnes as a way to say thank you to the nurses who cared for him and to thank nurses everywhere for what they do for patients. What started as a thank you to nurses from the Barnes family has turned into a meaningful recognition program embraced by healthcare organizations all around the world, McDonough said. McDonough said the past 15 months have been challenging for those in healthcare. The global pandemic has put stress and strain on all of us, she said. In the midst of growing restrictions, the need to wear extra personal protective equipment, patients being uncertain about utilizing the healthcare system, fear for their own lives and health, nurses continue to extend compassion and kindness, making extraordinary differences in the lives of patients and families. It is the comfort and compassion that patients remember most, she said. McDonough also shared some comments from Thielen's nomination. This nurse is a leader for her teammates and jumps in times of crisis. This nurse is respected by her peers, management, physicians, and healthcare providers. This nurse willingly takes on new projects and does each task flawlessly. Even when faced with personal obstacles, this nurse dedicates herself to patients, team members, church, and community. This nurse loves to educate others and shares the incredible knowledge she's gained over the years, McDonough said. This nurse has proven time and time again that their passion is giving exceptional care to patients. Thielen was joined by her mother, Sharon Siebert, and son, Dylan. Organizers of a celebration sneaked the two into the ceremony to surprise Thielen. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, and now we will look at today's obituary page. Pamela Steck. Pamela J. Pohl Steck, 69, of Badger, died Wednesday, April 28th at her home. Visitation is Saturday from 12 to 1 p.m. at Loffisweiler Funeral Home. Celebration of life to follow at 1 o'clock in the chapel of Loffisweilers. Survivors include her three children, Crystal Chris Wendell, Lance Steck, and Cheryl Steck, five grandchildren who love to spend time with Tanya and Kirsten, daughters of Crystal, Cheryl's children, Cheyenne, Tegan, and Tevin, sisters Mona Baker and Melissa Brown, and several nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, Elmer and Arloween Carlson Pohl, and husband Mike. Pamela Jean Steck Pohl was born January 14, 1952. Pam was a very devoted wife, mother, grandmother, and keeper of the house. Pamela enjoyed many things, including bird watching, crochet, plants inside and out, traveling when she could, and having her grandkids come and stay with her during summer vacations. She very much loved her pets and supported the shelter, animals, and pets in need. Pam loved acquiring cardinal art pieces, which she displayed all year round. She loved to sit near a fire, and this was often the center of just getting together and spending time with family. Pam was dearly loved and will be greatly missed by friends and family. In lieu of flowers, the family asked that her love live on through donations in her memory to the Almost Home Humane Society of North Central Iowa in Fort Dodge. From Farnhamville, Gerald Thomas. Gerald Dean Thomas, 87, died Wednesday, May 12th at Shady Oaks Care Center, Lake City. Services will be 10:30 Saturday, May 15th at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Farnhamville. Burial will be in the Reading Township Cemetery near Farnhamville. Military rites presented by the American Legion, Post 510 from Farnhamville. Visitation is 4 to 7 Friday at the church. Palmer Funeral Home and Gallery is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family, and mass are optional. From Bradgate, Connie Vogt. Connie Vogt, 74, of Bradgate, died Tuesday, May 11th at her home in Bradgate. Services will be Saturday, May 15th at 11 o'clock at the Marble Valley Cemetery, Gilmore City. Visitation is 5 to 7 Friday at Harris Funeral Home, Gilmore City. The wearing of masks is at the discretion of the individuals in attendance. A complete obituary can be read at harrisfuneralservices.com. And that is the extent of today's obituary page. There's a picture in the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal, a picture of Jan Anderson and Joan Nessa as they filled planters Wednesday afternoon in downtown Webster City. The Town and Country Garden Club was out in force to spruce up the downtown. And that was in today's Daily Freeman Journal. The Ames Children's Choirs will present their annual spring concert on Saturday, May 22nd at 3 o'clock at the Hickory Shelter in Brookside Park, located at 1325 6th Street in Ames. The concert is free and open to the public. Program repertoire will range from folk songs to living composers. Accompaniment will include piano, flute, and percussion. The Ames Children's Choir's program consists of four choirs of treble and bass voices from ages 7 through 18, from Ames, Boone, Gilbert, and Madrid. Placement auditions for the 21-22 season of the Ames Children's Choirs will be conducted from May 31st through June 4th. For more information, contact info at ameschildrenschoirs.org or 515-290-1422. Shelby Kruna, the director of Hamilton County Public Health, was named the Woman of the Year for 2021 for Laureate Gamma Omicron Chapter Beta Sigma Pi International Sorority. The presentation was made by chapter president Cheryl Asmus. Asmus said the designation was for all that Kerna had done for the community and county during the pandemic. Kerna was also presented with a $50 donation for Hamilton County Public Health. Go ahead and head over to the sports section of the Messenger. Coaching Dean is the title of the first article from the sports section. For over 40 years, the medals and the championships have been nothing more than icing on the cake for Dean Clayson. His coaching and teaching is centered around teaching life lessons and enjoying the process. Win or lose, it doesn't affect your job and how you do it. The experiences that you have, the disappointments, the frustrations, and the training, those are the important things, Clayson said. Nobody remembers the medals you won down the road. It's the character you show. We want to make you a good person first. The life cycle of a high school athlete is an interesting one, and no one knows that more than the longtime area coach. Students join a program as a 14-year-old youngster and leave as a more mature 18-year-old version of themselves. It's really gratifying to see the progression from a freshman to a senior, said Klassen, a coach for Humboldt High School. When I first started, we had some young bucks who were really competitive and wanted to start the world on fire. They just didn't have enough matches. Teaching them and developing them into a better version of themselves on and off the course or track is great to see. Leadership has been in Klassen's blood since starting as an assistant track and basketball coach at Webster City in 1979. He has been at his final destination, Humboldt, for over 30 years. He had a 6-year stint at South Hamilton, where he was the girls' track coach for 6 years. He started his first team with 6 girls in the program. Klassen, who is originally from Rock Rapids, came to Humboldt in the 1988-89 campaign and took over the girls' track program that spring. He became the Wildcats boys and girls cross-country coach in 1998 and has been there ever since. The 2020 track season was the final one at the helm for Klassen with the girls' track program. He took a step back to help and mentor the program's current head coach, Spencer Ross. I was going to retire last year, but I stuck it out another year because of COVID canceling the season. Spencer came in and had done a fantastic job. He came in during his second year as an assistant and started taking over workouts. He has done a fantastic job and is very knowledgeable. After over 30 years, I need to move on. I have a part-time job at the Humboldt Mutual Insurance Association, and being a member of the Nokomis Woodworking Club, I have to give justice to that as well. Both were factors, he said. My wife, Linda, has been extremely patient. She likes to travel. It's about time we do that. Linda has been a really big factor in what I have done. She is so supportive. The veteran coach is still planning on leading the Humboldt cross country program for a few more years. With cross country, I'm playing it by ear, he said. I can't just quit cold turkey. When a runner starts in Klassen's program, the coach makes sure every ounce of energy goes into making their experience a productive one. The biggest thing for me, and a lot of kids land in this category, is when that light bulb comes on, they aren't as strong and are usually still growing as underclassmen. Then they shoot up and get slower and frustrated for a while. Being able to convince those kids to stick with it for the long term and have some success and mature by the time they're juniors and seniors is what it's all about. When Klassen began his stint at South Hamilton, he quickly realized the overlap between cross country and track. When I got to South Hamilton, Vern Hill really helped me out. We had 6 girls, and I asked him what I could do. He said, you can't have track without cross country. So we started cross country. I didn't know a doggone thing about the sport at the time other than meets that I had worked at Webster City. I went to a lot of track clinics for over 35 years and talked to people. They shared information that allowed me to get better. I also did a lot of reading and research. There's just so much to it. Running is like a roadmap. There are a lot of ways to get to the same destination. As long as you believe in what you are doing and explain it, the kids will buy into it. Being around student athletes who work hard and live up to their potential is one of Klassen's biggest rewards. Going back to the early 2000s, that group enjoyed running. We went into the district meet without anyone in the top 10. We won the district running with each other between 11th and 20th. We showed them what a team could do. Klassen also enjoys seeing his former athletes grow and mature in college and the real world. I've watched them develop, he said. I can take them where they need to be. If they have a good experience and enjoy it here, they will continue to do it. That's the fun part, seeing them continue. I have some former Wildcats who are older and running in marathons. It's great to see them continue. Klassen fondly and vividly remembers the 2017 North Central Conference Championships. The year we won the NCC in 2017 was absolutely perfect, he said. I stood across the field and watched the girls celebrating. Klassen retired as an industrial arts teacher at the Humboldt Middle School in 2013. His focus still to this day is maximizing the overall experience for his student athletes. We had some good people through the years not able to get in the top five at state, Klassen said, but lately we've had our best performances at the state meet. You can't do anything about anyone else. As long as you have your best performance, that's all you can ask. You take that as your win. Area athletes are ready to make their state track push. That is the title of the next article. Area track and field athletes were denied the chance to run at the state meet a season ago. Now they are more than ready to punch their state tickets. State qualifying meets will be held across Iowa on Thursday as runners and competitors take their shot at competing on the Blue Oval at Drake Stadium. The top two finishers at each site, as well as the next 12 best times or distances, will advance in Class 4A. In Class 3A, the top two performers at the meets and the next best eight efforts in each event will earn state spots. Class 1A's event winner plus the next best 14 performances will earn a spot. The Fort Dodge boys and girls will compete in Waukee. The Fort Dodge school record 4x100 of quartet of Christian Davidson, Jake Erickson, Sam Daniel, and Tyre Schreier enter the meet with the fastest time. Davidson, Danielson, Erickson, and Schreier had the quickest time in the sprint medley relay as well. Schreier has the third best mark for Thursday's qualifying meet in the 100 and the long jump. Sawyer Springer has the third best throw in the shot put. The St. Edmund boys and girls will compete in Madrid in the Class 1A meet. St. Edmund's Case Baker has the top regular season time for the Madrid meet in the 200-meter dash. And the second best mark in the 100, Sean Flattery is second quickest in the 400. The Gales have four of the fastest relays in Madrid, the 4x100 of Grant Heldorfer, Kale Kalasha, Flattery, and Baker. In the 4x200, Kalasha, Flattery, Anthony Lucina, and Baker. Also, Heldorfer, Kalasha, Parker, and Parker Oswald, and Flattery had the fastest mark in the 4x400. The sprint medley relay quartet of Oswald, Lucina, Baker, and Flattery are also the standard, and St. Edmund is second in the 4x800. The St. Edmund girls 4x400 squad of Caroline Shelley, Emma Allstott, Maya McLean, and Avery Gallus had the fastest mark from Madrid. Shelley, Michaela Lighting, Allstott, and Aubrey Bemrick are the fastest in the 4x800 as well. Josie Harvey, McLean, Gallus, and Bemrick are the top seed in the distance medley relay. Bemrick is second in the 800. In Class 3A, Algona, Humboldt, and Webster City will all run at Nevada. The Humboldt boys had the quickest time in the 4x800, distance medley, and shuttle hurdle relays. Senior Quentin Orr is the fastest in the distance triple, the 800, 1600, and 3200. Webster City's J.J. Moore has the best throws in both the shot put and discus. Algona's Mariah Knapp in the 3000, Deanna Van Gorkum in the high jump bring the top qualifying marks to Nevada. Humboldt's Lily Grote in the 400s and Kendall Clark in the discus and shot put are in the same position. Humboldt has the fastest 4x100. Algona has the fastest 4x200. Manson Northwest Webster will hold a Class 2A meet with area teams Eagle Grove, Esek County, Hammondsburg, Greene County, Pocahontas Area, South Central Calhoun, and Southeast Valley. For the boys, Greene County is the quickest in the 4x400 and shuttle hurdle relay. Also for the Rams, Jackson Morton in the 110 hurdles, Nathan Black in the high jump had the top regular season performances. Pocahontas Area is number one in the boys distance medley relay. Also for the Indians, Jacob Gertis is the fastest in the 800. For Southeast Valley, Cooper Nuss in the 1600 is the standard. South Central Calhoun's Cole Corey has the best mark in the 400 hurdles. On the girls' side, Manson Northwest Webster's Maddie Moline has the fastest time in the 1500 and 3000. Teammates Janie Weiss in the high jump and Lexi Wood in the shot put are the athletes to beat in their respective events. Southeast Valley's Kirsten Fisher has the best performance in the long jump and 100-meter hurdles. Emmitsburg has the quickest 4x100 time. At Waukee, the Class 4A meet made up of Ankeny, Des Moines Lincoln, Des Moines North, Fort Dodge, Indianola, Johnston, Norwalk, and Waukee. In Class 3A at Nevada, we have Algona, Clear Lake, Gilbert, Hampton, Dumont, Cal, Humboldt, Nevada, North Polk, and Webster City. At Hudson, you have Amplington, Parkersburg, Belmont, Clammy, Central Springs, Clarion, Goldfield, Dallas, Waterloo, Columbus, Dyke, New Hartford, Forest City, Garner, Hayfield, Ventura, Hudson, Iowa Falls, Alden, Osage, and South Hardin. At Manson Northwest Webster, you have Eagle Grove, Esek County, Emmitsburg, Estherville, Lincoln Central, Green County, Manson Northwest Webster, OABCIG, Pocahontas Area, Ridgeview, Sioux Central, South Central Calhoun, and Southeast Valley. In Class 1A at Madrid, you have Ankeny Christian, Baxter, Collins Maxwell, Colonesco, Grandview Christian, Linville Sully, Madrid, Martinsdale, St. Mary's, Melcher Dallas, Ogden, Peyton Churdan, Southeast Warren, St. Edmund, and Twin Cedars. At Audubon, Alta Aurelia, Audubon, Anita Cam, Coon Rapids Bayard, Earlham, Exirat, Elkhorn, Kimmelton, Glidden Ralston, Griswold, IKM Manning, Newell Fonda, Nottoway Valley, Orient Maxburg, Storm Lake, St. Mary's, and Stanton. And at Northwood Kinseth, you have Bishop Garrigan, Grettinger, Terrell, Ruthven, Ayrshire, Lake Mills, Nashua Plainfield, Mason City, Newman, North Iowa, North Union, Northwood Kinseth, Riceville, Rockford, St. Ansgar, West Bend Mallard, West Fork, and West Hancock. Hope you got all that. It was another strong day on the track and in the field for Iowa Central Wednesday in Loveland, Texas, at the NJCAA Track Championships. Only a handful of finals were contested, but Calvin Bungie picked up one of the titles, winning the 3,000-meter steeplechase. He finished almost 10 seconds ahead of the runner-up in the event. On the women's side, both Lilia Alvarez and Ashley Michou earned third-place finishes. Alvarez scored bronze in the steeplechase, with Michou adding a third put in the shot put to go with her runner-up in the hammer. Nicola Paletti picked up third place in the decathlon, with teammate Ari Scott finishing sixth to give the Tritons 19 points. In the high jump, David Busquez Grimaldo tied for third. Kaya Wolf finished off her day in the heptathlon by scoring 3,317 points to place fourth. Hannah Connell shined bright in preliminary events, qualifying for the 100-meter hurdles, 100-meter dash, and 200-meter dash. All of those races will take place Thursday. In the 100 hurdles, Connell set a new personal record and locked in the second fastest time in program history, which was also quickest in the prelims. Connell, a future University of South Florida athlete, later went 11:45 in the 100-meter dash, which is the 10th fastest time in NJCAA history. She locked in the 5th best 200 time and will be joined by teammate Odell Fry in the finals. Fry had the 9th best time for Iowa Central. Bungie also qualified for the 1500-meter final earlier in the day with the fast prelim time. Rosalie Fish advanced to the women's 1500-meter final as well. Yaheem Hales, who is headed to Syracuse University to run, clocked the quickest time in the 110-meter hurdles. Through 8 events on the mid-side, Iowa Central is third with 30 points, while the women are third with 40 points through 9 events scored. The St. Edmund tennis team played in districts recently. The St. Edmund boys tennis team competed at a district meet in Carroll on Wednesday. Joseph Lee won his first two matches by scores of 6-0, 6-2, then 6-4, 6-4. In the semifinals, he lost to the eventual champion Jeff Miller of Council Bluffs St. Albert 6-3, 6-0. Lee then bounced back to place third with a 3-6, 6-3, 11-9 win. Joe played through some real physical adversity and made some needed adjustments to his game to secure his first district medal, said St. Edmund head coach Joe Perry. For playing his first season of high school tennis, Joseph has done quite well, and I am very proud of his performance. In doubles action, Lucas Cordner and Emmanuel Perry won their first round match 7-6, 6-3, 6-4, then fell in their quarterfinal match. These two young men really improved this season as a duo, and it was exciting to watch them win their first district match playing together, Perry said. Let's go ahead and take a look at some of the happenings on this date, May 13th. On this date in 1846, the United States Congress declared war on Mexico. On this date in 1958, Vice President Nixon was attacked. On this date in 1607, Jamestown settlers arrived. On this date in 1981, Pope John Paul II was shot. In 1985, a raid is set for MOVE headquarters. In 1568, Mary, Queen of Scots, was defeated. In 1940, Churchill announces, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat." On this date in 1973, Bobby Riggs and Margaret Court face off in the First Battle of the Sexes. And on this date in 1915, Edith Wharton wrote of the war's effect on France. Let's go ahead and take a look at our weather forecast as our time together. Our time together is drawing to a close. Again, we've had a beautiful day in Fort Dodge on Thursday. On Friday, we have a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high of only 57 degrees, an 80% chance under cloudy skies. Wind south-southeast 13 miles per hour to 24 miles per hour. Chance of thunderstorms and showers continue Friday night with a low of 48 degrees and winds gusting up to 18 miles per hour. Saturday looks okay, a high of 72 under mostly cloudy skies. Rain chance is only 20%. And gusts of wind up to 13 miles per hour. Saturday night, we'll have a low of 49. 30% chance of rain and thunderstorms on Sunday, a high of 74 with wind gusts up to 17 miles per hour, a low Sunday night of 51 degrees. On Monday, warming up to a nice warm day of 78 degrees under partly cloudy skies, or mostly clear, depending on how you want to look at it. East-northeast winds gusting up to 16 miles per hour. Mostly clear Monday night, a low of 53. Warm on Tuesday, high of 79 under mostly clear skies, 20% chance of precipitation. Winds gusting up to 17 miles per hour. Tuesday night, low of 56 degrees. On Wednesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms, a 77% chance, 77 degrees, and a 30% chance, I meant to say, of showers and thunderstorms, wind gusts of up to 18 miles per hour. Chance of showers and thunderstorms will continue on Thursday with a high of 78 degrees, and wind gusts of up to 19 miles per hour for Thursday. And Thursday night, we're looking at partly cloudy skies. Wednesday, kind of steady, gusting up to 19 degrees. So that'll take care of the forecast for the next 7 days or so. So I think we'll bring to a close this reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger with some help from the Daily Freeman Journal of Webster City. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening as always. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. And we appreciate your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, take good care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you again real soon here on IRIS. Bye-bye for now.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Sometimes we have too much electricity, but more often, grid operators are carefully managing its production to be sure that we have enough. So, a lot of work has gone into trying to store excess electricity to use later when we need it. The obvious solution, giant batteries, is still too expensive for most applications and has environmental implications. This has led scientists to look for other ways. One method uses surplus power to compress air and pump it into old salt mines. The salt tends to seal cracks in the walls, making the mines airtight. When needed, the compressed air can be released to turn a turbine, or it can be used as the intake air for a natural gas power plant, making the plant more productive. Another way to store excess energy is to pump water uphill into existing reservoirs and then release it through hydroelectric dams when power is needed. This method was pioneered 100 years ago in Italy and Switzerland, and is used today around the world, and in many U.S. states, like Michigan. On the Chilean coast, they're even experimenting with using solar energy to pump seawater up a cliff, where it could flow down to make power at night. These solutions don't make economic sense unless the electricity is very cheap, and the reservoir was already built for another purpose. But when those two things are present, pumping air and water to store energy plays a valuable role in balancing the grid to meet our ever-changing power demands. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.